Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, a Canadian father and daughter on their new swimwear line for trans girls and teens, and a gay mystery novel about homophobia and sex scandals at the highest levels of the Roman Catholic Church. We'll hear later this half hour from author David Perry about his thriller, Upon This Rock. First, producer Kendra Klang speaks with Jamie and Ruby Alexander, the Toronto-based father-daughter duo behind Ruby's, a form-fitting clothing line for transgender girls.
When Ruby Alexander was 11 years old, she decided she wanted to wear a bikini, just like her friends. After an extensive search, her father, tech entrepreneur Jamie Alexander, realized that there weren't really any suitable bikini bottoms for his daughter, or for other transgender and gender non-conforming kids. So he decided to make his own, and the Ruby swimwear line was founded in 2019. Since then, over 1,000 black and pink shaping bikini bottoms have been sold in more than 20 countries worldwide. And each package of Ruby's bikini bottoms includes a note from the now 13-year-old Ruby Alexander herself. Welcome, Jamie and Ruby. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Jamie, let's start with you. When and why did you decide to create Ruby's?
Came out of necessity. As you mentioned, Ruby is transgender. She socially transitioned when she was 9. And I would say my wife, Ange, and I had some concerns about her safety. So for the first 2 years, she was wearing board shorts for swimming and sweatpants for gymnastics. And when she turned 11, she came to us and said, "Daddy, I want to wear a bikini like my friends." And that was really where I started to think about this and really look around and see what was out there.
And tell us about the features of these bikini bottoms and one-piece swimsuits. What makes them different from other swimwear?
Actually, what I wanted to do is make them look exactly like and feel like normal swimwear. So that was like one of the big design points. But what makes them different is it's really in the materials being used. So it's the outer fabric, the amount of spandex in the fabric, the inner fabric, the mesh, and the amount of compression of the fabric. And so it's just the patterns being designed so that the inside lining pulls everything in and keeps them in place, while the outside lining kind of provides that extra layer. It's just, you know, we went through at least 10 iterations of our prototypes, bringing different people in. You know, obviously Ruby is my first tester, but I had to go outside of that. And, you know, it's not easy to find testers. You know, I'm asking parents, can you try out new bikini bottoms last summer, which is really where I was further testing. I would literally be riding my bicycle with bikini bottoms in my bag and just going to different people's houses. And then they would go in the house, try them on, come out on their porch and show me what they look like. They would feel comfortable enough for me to take pictures and send them back to the studio that makes them to get the feedback. So it's been awesome. And I actually have a round of underwear coming out. And I'm actually not in Toronto at the moment. So I've been able to organize for people to come into the studio in a safe way and try out the underwear before I commit to producing a large number.
And Ruby, you've been wearing these swimsuits, and as your dad said, you're the first model. What do you like about them?
Well, I love how they just make me feel like the girl that I am. And I like that I don't have to go to the beach in like board shorts, and I can just wear a bikini bottom that makes me feel like confident and just like my other friends and everyone else there.
Are you hoping for new patterns or colors? What are you hoping comes out next for Ruby Swimwear?
I'm really hoping we'll be making like bikini tops, because we have the bottoms, but I feel like we need to make bikini tops. So I'm really hoping we can make.
What colors are you up
White,
for?
Black, blue, pink. Maybe green.
I love the palette. Jamie, what response have you had from parents and families of other trans girls or non-binary kids?
Yeah, it's been overwhelming in many ways. So number one is just about the functionality of the thing itself, the bottoms, and that they're really impressed. So I get a lot of people saying I was very skeptical because there's things like tucking and gaffs and like kind of really like painful things that that a lot of people have been doing in the past to, you know, keep, you know, hide things. And so a lot of people are skeptical because my whole thing is like, you don't have to do that. And so they're super pleased with the way that the garments work, the way that it shapes the area. So that's number one, is like, wow, this actually works. Great. Number two, though, I think is, you know, which arguably could be even bigger, is that, you know, there's people from all around the world, and they all have different levels of support around them. And for them to know that there is a company out there that cares about their family and their kids and that can help them. And we try to be a bit more than just like a clothing company. It's like, here's a transaction, you know, buy a bikini from us, done. For us, it's we want the kids to know, like, and that's why, you know, we send notes in with our packages. We spend a lot of time on the kind of experience for people when they open up the package, and we want them to feel good, you know. And you know, so we like spend time folding tissue paper nicely. For it to be like perfect. And my parents have been helping with the packing, and she went out and got these little stars for the smaller sizes to throw these little stars inside the pocket. So like these little touches are really important for us. So to me, it's more than a business. It's like a community of people. And I think that's sort of the biggest, like the biggest amount of feedback I get is just like, wow, thanks for like doing this. Thanks for supporting our community.
And Ruby, you've really been part of that. Your dad was saying initially you wrote handwritten notes for every package, and then it's gotten too big for that now. But do you have a note that you could read for our listeners and tell us what you say to the customers?
I have one right here. So I wrote my name, my age, and then back that time I was in Toronto. So I said Toronto, Canada, and I did it in like a pattern, like the trans colors. So like blue, pink, white, and then blue, pink, white, like that. I wrote, "Hi there, my name is Ruby. I'm a transgender girl and can understand you. You are a star that shines bright into the sky. Don't let anyone dim that light. Just keep being you and don't let anyone tell you who to be. You get to decide who you want to be and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Ruby."
Ruby, I love it. Jamie, these handwritten notes were part of the Every Girl Deserves to Shine campaign. Can you tell us about that? What is it and how can our listeners support Ruby's?
Yeah, for sure. So Every Girl Deserves to Shine is exactly what we mean is that there really should be no one out there that should not be able to have one of our products, if you know, whether they can afford it or not, because we believe that it literally is a life-changing product for people. Like people have sent us feedback that, you know, their kids, you know, like for a lot of people, like being in the water and being by the pool, like that's a huge part of childhood. And that's like being taken away from people. And there's literally like people where multiple years they go, like after they transition, where they're not comfortable. And so we think everyone should have that opportunity. But I also know that because my products are made in Toronto, they're made with the highest quality materials, there will be a number of people that it's just going to be out of their reach financially. And so we started the Every Girl Deserves to Shine campaign, and there's a few different aspects. Simplest thing is we've got t-shirt sales. Proceeds of those t-shirts go to funding donations. So effectively on the product page, right under the buy button, there's a note there that says, you know, if you can't afford this, click here. And it takes you to a very quick, you know, kind of application process. We pretty much accept everyone that has kids in their care 18 years and under. And originally we started like 4 to 13, but we've had actually such an overwhelming amount of support that we wanted to increase it because we want to donate as much as we can. And so effectively right now, I have many hundreds more to donate. So we also, through this Every Girl Deserves Shine campaign, we have a GoFundMe page. We've raised over $22,000 so far. Wow. We've sent out hundreds of, a good percentage of the bottoms that we mail out are donations. And I think it's a great model for, I do think this does need to be commercially successful business because that will allow me to build out more product and be able to reach, you know, the as many people as I can, but at the same time, being able to have it, equal to all is really important. And I hope other businesses will consider doing those similar models as well.
And Ruby, has this, your dad now has started Ruby's and a few other businesses. Is this impacting what you want to do as you get older?
Definitely, a lot. Yeah. It's like changing my life, basically. I mean, it's changing not just my life, but trans kids' lives and everybody who needs a bathing suit who doesn't feel comfortable with the swimwear they already have.
And Jamie, it sounds like word's gotten out, and it's not just kids now. Adults are also becoming interested in your product. What's next for Ruby's?
Yeah, I mean, the intent of the brand is really always for the future that I can imagine is really still geared towards kids. That being said, I got a ton of adults that, you know, I guess for them, they weren't able to find the options, and they reached out and they said, can you, like, are you making larger sizes? You know, do you want an adults line? And I did think about it a lot. Like, it's really important when you're creating a business and a product to really focus on one area. And I think, you know, kids is a super important demographic, and it's a very important stage in their life, this mm-hmm. range between like 4 and like literally like up to puberty kind of thing. Right. That being said, I do, like I said, I want this to be equal to all. If adults can take advantage of my product, awesome. From both a missions point of view and from a commercial point of view, what I did is I decided just to add larger kid sizes. So I have up to a size 24. I'm sure there's hardly any product that exists with a size 24 kids, but I have a size 24. Size 24 is basically up to a 40-inch waist. So it's like there's a lot of range. And now I'm even adding interim sizes for the smaller ones. So I'm going to have like a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16, 18, 20, 24, 20, up to 24. So there's going to be a range for pretty much everyone that feels comfortable wearing a bikini bottom. Not everyone does.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see more from Ruby's as you guys keep working on this company. And Ruby, I look forward to seeing what's next from you as well. Thank you both so much for joining me. Jamie and Ruby, where can our listeners find more out about Ruby's?
Yeah, so two places. Number one, our website, rubyshines.com, rubyshines.com. And then we have an Instagram. It's at rubiesdad, rubiesdad.
Perfect. Thank you both. That's Jamie and Ruby Alexander, the father and daughter duo behind Ruby's, a form-fitting clothing line for transgender girls and non-binary kids. I'm Kendra Klang, and this is Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco.
Thanks, Kendra. Now we turn to and hear passages from Upon This Rock. It's a tangled web murder mystery set in Italy and Vatican City, with Catholic corruption, hidden homosexuality, the international refugee crisis, and much more in the mix. I spoke with author David Perry shortly before the novel's publication last fall. It's now a finalist for the Ben Franklin Award Best Gay Novel of 2020. So, David, if you could please give our listeners a brief synopsis of what the book's about, and then you'll read a passage, right?
Well, I certainly will. Thank you. So a young couple from San Francisco, Lee and his husband, Adriano, arrive in Orvieto, which is a iconic hilltop town in Umbria, in Italy, arrive to get over the death of a very, very dear friend. And when they arrive, they find out that they have arrived on the one-year anniversary of the suicide of a beloved young man, Deacon Andrea, who it was rumored was gay. And because of the rumor that he was gay, the church prohibited him from becoming a priest. And he was so distraught, he threw himself from the cliffs of Orvieto. And Lee and Adriano become obsessed with this mystery, this suicide, or is it a suicide? And in the process, they find themselves in the middle of an international conspiracy that might indeed bring down the Catholic Church and lead to a nuclear disaster. And this all takes place literally upon this rock, which is what Orvieto is known for. And of course, that is an homage to the biblical phrase, upon this rock, I shall build my church.
Great. If you have a passage ready to read, I think now's the time to read it.
Oh, sure. Actually, I'll read you the prologue. Great. He stood on the cliff and prayed. Useless, he thought, to turn my pleas to God. Behind him, the lights of Orvieto reflected in a million icy crystals. Snow had come early this year. It wasn't yet December. Below, the road would be deserted, and he wondered who would find him. Someone would, of course, and for that he was sorry. What a horrible thing to see, to discover, the body of a reprobate, crushed against the rock and never to see forgiveness. never to see the face of God, never to see another sunrise. It should be beautiful, and he smiled. He had often come here to sit near the altar and wait for the dawn. Tomorrow, its rays would reach out to warm the city across a quilt of virginal frost. He had seen it before, prisms of color in the ice, like a miracle it had seemed to him as a child. No more. No more dawns. No more rainbows. No more miracles. Don't! He heard the scream, but too late. He had already stepped off the cliff, arms outspread like a cross, and dived for the tombs below.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was David Perry. David Perry reading from his murder mystery, Upon This Rock. So there was an actual suicide in Orvieto about 10 years ago, about, I guess, 6 or 7 years before the first time you went there, right?
Eric, you've always been known for your years as a journalist for doing your research. That's very true. The novel is eerie in the way it came to us. I knew when my husband Alfredo and I went to Orvieto, sight unseen. We did a house swap with two dear friends, Tony and Kip. And we knew we wanted to escape because our three best friends had died within less than a year, and we were their caregivers. And we were just a bit, we needed a break. So we arrived at Orvieto on November 30th, which is St. Andrew's Day, San Andrea. And literally the first night there, we had dinner with someone in town, and they told us that 4 years previous, a young man, a young deacon, Luca Sedeta, had killed himself. He had thrown himself from the cliffs because he had been denied ordination because there was a rumor that he was gay, and he was so distraught he couldn't deal with it. And I just became obsessed with the story, one, that we had arrived literally on the anniversary and people were still talking about it, and two, in a previous life before I had dealt with my own sexuality, I very seriously thought about becoming a priest or a monk. And it bothered me that this young man, who by all counts was beloved and kind, and everyone in the town loved him, and Orvieto is a very unique combination of characters, and I just thought, this man's life needs somehow to be made artful, I guess. And so I put together, it's a complete fiction, it's a novel, but with that as the inspiration. And then I also found out later that during the Renaissance, Pope Clement VII was actually in Orvieto. It's one of the places popes would go to escape bad times in Rome. And he was actually in Orvieto when King Henry VIII requested a divorce from Anne Boleyn. And of course, that subsequent breakup of the church started actually in Orvieto. And I found that these two threads, 500 years apart, gave me the idea of a book that dealt with religion, sexuality, mystery, and how they all literally came together in this one very small town upon this rock in Orvieto.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in Berkeley without much religious upbringing. My parents didn't really want to have anything to do with the church. In fact, my grandfather was a theosophist, which I guess is kind of a study of religion in a way, but without subscription to any particular one. Anyway, we never went to church when I was a kid. I knew nothing about religion. So reading this book is actually giving me an education about some high points in Catholic church history and world history, for that matter. So you mentioned Clement the Seventh. So he's an actual person, and I assume that his cousin Leo the Tenth, Pope Leo the Tenth, was also a real person. And there's some
the gayest pope in history.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I was going to ask you, like, so how much of that is true? So there's a lot of this actual history that we're learning. These are actual facts, and so it's hard to tell where the fiction comes in and where the real stuff leaves off.
Yeah, I would say this. I'm very proud of this. I love doing research, and I'm a history nut. I always have been. It was my favorite subject in school. Anything you read in the present, or it's set in 2013 during just after Pope Francis has become Pope, is fiction. Anything you read about what happened in Orvieto, whether it's during Clement being there in Orvieto, World War II, the time of the Medici, all that history is impeccably researched and is accurate. I mean, the conversations, of course, have been theorized, but they're also based on real conversation. It's one of my favorite sections in the book. That's a dinner that a Jewish banker hosts for Pope Clement. And that could have actually taken place. And that dinner party actually sources letters and manuscripts from the Renaissance that I found during my research. So the history of the book is impeccable. Nothing would make me happier than for someone to have that book in their hand at Orvieto and walk around and see the places and look at my book and say, I wonder if that happened here. And I can tell you, it absolutely did.
Okay, fantastic. So your main characters, Lee and Adriano, similar. Lee, like you, came from Richmond, Virginia, and Adriano came from Spain, like Alfredo. But you have very different views. These two characters have very different views of the Catholic Church. And you also illustrate the complicated relationship between the church and homosexuality throughout the history and the scandals. And curious to know why you took up this particular topic in this book, the homosexuality, the hidden homosexuality in the Catholic Church.
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is, you know, I was born and raised a Catholic. I went to Catholic school for 12 years, including 4 at Catholic Military School, Benedictine Military Institute. Sadly, the same school and the same church attended by Steve Bannon. We were both in the same building many times, although he's a few years older than me. And being born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, the erstwhile capital of the Confederacy, as a Catholic, that's just a lot of baggage you get to work through. And it's hard not to have that impact one's writing, at least for me. So someone asked me, is the book about the church? Is it pro-church or anti-church? I said, it's about the miasma that is the Catholic Church and faith. You know, to me, the book is about one thing overall. It's about refugees. Everyone in the book is a refugee. Adriano is a refugee from his very religious Catholic family. Lee is a refugee from the kind of racism of the South. Pope Clement is a refugee, had to flee Rome dressed like a beggar. And everyone else in the book, in a sense, is a refugee. And the backstory is the ongoing refugee crisis. There are two main characters, Miriam and her brother Dawood, who escaped from war-torn Libya to come to Italy. So the refugee crisis is very much front and center in this book.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I've gotten about halfway through the book, so I know Marianne is on the boat or about to get off the boat. Why did you want to include the refugee, this huge problem with international refugees in your book?
Living and writing in Orvieto and every day seeing refugees, immigrants on the streets selling socks or candy or whatever it was to live, and reading the local news, you know, and seeing this, I could not tell this story in this place without including that. So the stories really found me. The whole idea came to me in a flash in the first weeks of being in Orvieto. And then the characters just kind of spun out as I knew I wanted to tell a tale about how religions and sexuality met and did combat on this rock. I didn't know that the characters that would lead me to tell it would be so close. Adriano and Lee, I mean, you know, what a coincidence. Adriano is from Spain, although he's 30 years younger than Alfredo, and Lee is from Richmond, Virginia. He's 30 years younger than I am. But other than that, I'll let our friends decide how much of our characters are there. Armistead Maupin once said, when someone asked him, which characters are part of you? And he said, all of them. And in a sense, that's true.
So you have another passage you'd like to read. Is that right?
Since this is a gay show, I'm going to read one of the gayer chapters. It's very short.
Oh, please.
Because the novel does have sex. So this is called Fallen Angel. And it's the first time you meet Grigori, who is the bisexual Swiss guard who's tied up in a Vatican scandal. Sunday, December 1st, near midnight, the outskirts of Rome. The dance floor was packed. 1,000 sweaty bodies writhed in a Roman hypnosis of drugs, music, and alcohol. The floors were wet with sex. His inside chest pocket vibrated with the text. Grigori pulled out his phone. Quote, no Jew, no co. Uni, usual, 2. Huh, irregular. He recognized the number instantly in the code. No jewelry, don't wear cologne, bring the uniform, our usual, 2 a.m. Well, that would pay the rent this month, actually a bit more. C, he texted back, and slipped the cell phone back into his leather jacket, squeezing past a trio of groping dancers to make his way to the exit. At least this one didn't even want to touch him. Who was he to judge? And it paid well. Very well, actually. Grigori glanced at his watch, a gift from that very same client. The train from Orvieto had been late last night, and he hadn't gotten much sleep. Tonight was supposed to have been a welcome escape. A few drunken, ecstasy-fueled hours at the club should wipe away the memories of last night, of the last year, of Deacon Andrea. Ciao, Grigori. A slinky blonde in a short diaphanous sheath wrapped a leg around him. Haven't seen you in a while. How about it? Can't. Gotta go. Duty calls. The young woman pouted. Sometimes, Grigori, I don't think you like girls. The muscular youth bit her ear gently and licked the back of her neck. Cara, he said with an indecent grab under her skirt. You know better than that. I like everything. Grigori stepped outside into the rain and hailed one of the many taxis waiting outside. Il Vaticano. Presto.
To the Vatican we go, indeed.
Exactly.
Okay. And speaking of liking it all, you talked about Clement VII before, 16th century pope known for both the sack of Rome and for refusing to annul the marriage of Henry VIII of England, says, we'll never have peace in the world as long as religions hate each other. Jews, Muslims, Christians, all children of the book, and each so convinced that only they understand it. I am pope, and I don't understand it. So just wondering what you might hope, David Perry, would they would accomplish if religions were actually working together instead of fighting each other.
Well, you know, I've spent a lot of time with ordained people in my life. Our Alfredo and I were dear friends with Felipe Sanchez Perez, his husband, the first openly gay bishop in the world, Otis Charles, and my mentor and friend, the Reverend Anthony Turney from Grace Cathedral. And they were all openly gay men. And I remember once we had a conversation, we were talking about how God was everywhere. And I think it was Anthony who wryly said, yes, sometimes you even find him in church. You know, 95% of every war throughout the history of the world has been fought in the name of someone's God or someone's religion. So I think if religions could get together and actually get God out of the way, we might actually have peace. I am not a person who believes in organized religion per se, but I do believe that there are good people in many institutions. You know, someone once said to a philosopher, what do you think of Christianity? And the philosopher wrote back and said, I think we should try it. Meaning, I think we should try to judge a little less and have more dialogue. So politicians aren't doing a very good job. Maybe religions can somehow find the way to help us all live a kinder and gentler life. And of course, since 60% of the Catholic clergy are believed to be gay, that's certainly true in my experience, there are a lot of gay people that can help with solutions.
Very good. Thank you. That was David Perry reading from and talking about his debut novel, Upon This Rock. Upon This Rock is available in bookstores and on Amazon, where it has a 4.5-star rating. And as of this recording, May 7th, it was a finalist for the Ben Franklin Award Best Gay Novel of 2020. That's Out in the Bay for this week. Our guests were Upon This Rock author David Perry and Ruby and Jamie Alexander, the father-daughter duo behind Ruby Swimwear, for trans girls and other gender non-binary kids. You can find links to Ruby's swimwear and Upon This Rock at the bottom of our post about this week's show. It's on our website, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org, where you can hear this program again and past shows. Have a question, comment, or suggestion? What do you want to hear next? You can find us on Facebook at Out in the Bay and on Twitter and Instagram at OutInTheBaySF, or write to us, OutInTheBaySF@gmail.com. We'd love to see your comments. Today's show was produced by me and Kendra Klang and edited by Porfirio Rangel. Big thanks to Richard and Brad of Silicon Valley for generous donations this year, and to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence for a special grant. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, for supporting us and this station, and thanks for joining us out in the Bay.